this week, especially this morning, as people are returning now from the weekend, is going to be the passing of Muhammad Ali. And joining us right now on the Fox phone lines, a very dear friend of mine. I've known this man since I was a teenager. He was one of my bosses back in the day at the Pasadena Star News, and he's currently a contributor on CBS Sports Radio and WFAN. We're very happy to have him on with us this morning, my good friend Ron Flatter. Ron, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Bort. Yeah, you're a teenager. I've known you, two weeks now, right?
Exactly,
Is that how it works out?
Ron, let's talk about, there's a lot of stories. There's going to be so many stories regarding Muhammad Ali and his passing, and a lot of them will be from inside the ring, but a lot of them also have to deal with topics that are not necessarily, you know, the happy topics. It's the civil rights movement, it's the Vietnam War, stand, and I think as we start to unpeel the onion a little bit for Muhammad Ali, those stories are going to come out as well.
Oh, absolutely, and it's appropriate, I suppose, you call. We were talking about age here a few minutes ago, and I'm of an age to remember all of these things happening firsthand. Being 57 years old, I remember a lot of this stuff vividly from my childhood. And when I was growing up and finding my heroes, I won't say that Ali was the first pick among them. I was a Willie Mays guy, being a Northern Californian, loved him, loved Bill Russell, loved Joe Namath. And those were my early heroes. And then when it came to boxing, well, my guy was Joe Frazier. Well, then, so my arch rival then would be Muhammad Ali, and he was loud and he was brash, and I just looked at him all the wrong ways. And at that point in my life, I'm 11, I'm 12. Well, as 12 becomes 13, and 13 becomes 16, becomes 20, and 30, and 40. As you get older, you start to figure out values, and you start to look at things more skeptically. And as I became more of a skeptic, and I may be a champion skeptic in my older years, I started to look more at Ali in a very different way. And to me, that's where his value was in areas that didn't involve boxing, that did involve his conversion to Islam, his conversion from the name Cassius Clay. I mean, think about that. As a kid at 11 years old, for me, why is he changing his name? And what is Islam, and why is it Muhammad Ali? All those things were very eye-opening, and I think if nothing else, there was a didactic side to Muhammad Ali that had you having to learn what was really going on here, and then you started to poke holes in what we called the establishment for those who wanted to scoff at what he was doing. And slowly over time, I stopped being a Joe Frazier guy and started becoming a Muhammad Ali guy.
Ron Flatter joining us here on Fox. And there is this apprehension, I think, you know, with whether it be, you know, the general public or even news media a little bit, to bring up these controversial topics simply because we, being the majority, if you will, kind of become numb to it. We've learned that we're either too hard or too soft. And I think the discussion has to come up about these things. Again, we had the discussion not immediately after the passing of Prince or Michael Jackson, and I'm not comparing them in terms of how they passed away, but it's how we look at them later on after they've passed away. Now the topic of Prince is no longer about the influence he had musically, but it's about the opioids, and it's about, you know, his passing away because of, you know, narcotics and what have you. And I think that discussion happened. I'm okay with that discussion, and I don't want us to shy away from it simply because we live in too PC a culture.
Oh, and well, there you got right to it, is the fact that we're PC, and I think part of it, too, is fear that you're going to open your mouth and step on something in terms of what you say, and then suddenly you're getting called into the office for a one-week suspension. I think that's part of the problem right there. But if you just speak from your heart and speak from your brain, I don't think there's a whole lot of problem. In Ali's case, he was a pretty unpopular guy when he was on the vanguard of these issues, such as freedom of expression in religion, civil rights, racial equality, and anti-war. And while the anti-war part of all of this seems to be the one that ends up being the flavor of the month right now, all of those other ones were very much on the forefront, and we were all trying to understand what was going on. So Ali, in that way, and I don't think he set out to be a teacher by any means. I think he was just a guy trying to express himself at a young age and trying to find his footing, and was also very skeptical of what was white America. And in that regard, he accidentally stumbled upon a leadership role. And he did so at a time when, oh, by the way, he had the medium of a very flashy, very exciting boxing style. let's get to this. He was a fast heavyweight.
Right.
And as a kid at my age, again, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, you know, into my teens, watching Ali, I was spoiled. We were really spoiled to have a guy like him who was as fast as he was. Name a fast heavyweight now who's any good. You just can't. He was the guy. And when you're attracted to that, when you see that boxing style, there was a little bit of, you know, if he didn't open his mouth so much, and if he would just punch, he'd be the kind of guy I wanted to watch. That was what you heard a lot back then. And for him to have done that would have been horrible, because he wouldn't have been him. I think that was what we had to accept, is that him took on very different characteristics and colors, if you will, in that time, that we had to learn to accept that. We had to learn to embrace diversity, and I think we did so partly as a result of guys like Muhammad Ali, especially at that time.
You would think that the last thing the NFL would want is another potentially damaging court case. You would think the last thing that Roger Goodell would want is to have to deal with more fallout, whether it be from the media, former players, former what have yous, around the National Football League, and more potentially damaging evidence against the National Football League, owners, coaches, whatever. But that could be what's coming up next here. Just off the heels of the concussion settlement between the National Football League and roughly 20,000 ex-players, we now are on the heels of perhaps a new lawsuit against the National Football League. And joining us right now to tell us this story is our next guest. Alex Reamer is a contributor over at Forbes magazine. He also writes for Boston magazine. He's also a contributor on Boston Herald Radio, as well as SBNation.com. And Alex Reamer's kind enough to join us this morning on the Fox phone lines. Alex, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Steve. Anytime.
Appreciate it a lot. All right, so from an image standpoint, obviously, the NFL still is dealing with a pretty black eye. We'll get to the new lawsuit coming up here in just a moment, but give me your pure take on the NFL's perspective. As we see them now, as fans see them now, as businesses see them now, coming off the concussion lawsuit, what is the general perception in your mind and in the business community of the National Football League these days?
Well, I think the perception of the NFL, Steve, is a little different than the business reality of the NFL, or frankly, a lot different. I mean, the perception is that it's a duplicitous league, it's a selfish league, it's 32 greedy owners, it's folks who do not care about the players whatsoever. I think we learned that this multi-year concussion lawsuit, this new painkiller lawsuit, sheds new light on that as well. But the fact of the matter is, the NFL's bottom line hasn't been affected one iota by any of this stuff. I mean, in fact, the league, as you know, has never, ever been more popular than it is today. For Forbes, actually, a couple months ago, you know, despite all the bad PR the NFL continues to get here, I think they're winning on concussions. They're winning on a lot of these issues because it's not affecting their bottom line. That's the most important thing in their eyes. And if you also look at the concussion settlement as a whole, yes, $1 billion at first glance is a lot of money. Then you say, wow, it's thousands of players. It doesn't include anything for CTE. The league could have got hit a lot harder there, too. So the perception of the league couldn't be worse, but I don't think, frankly, the owners or Roger Goodell care about the perception, because it's not affecting their bottom line one iota.
And it's such a diabolical thing to say, because, you know, we live in a society, and, you know, there's, without getting into, like, sociopolitical things, which we don't do on this program really at all, but it does speak to the larger culture. It does speak to the, if it's out of sight, it's out of mind, we don't care about it, unless it affects us personally. And I fail to buy into that, because it does, it should affect us personally. It should be a bother when a business that we trust, a business that we enjoy, is so blatantly and horrifyingly just so obtuse about these things. And it should bother us.
It should, but man, it's fun to watch on Sunday and Mondays. I mean, it really is the NFL. And hey, I'm right there with you. You know, I'm as hypocritical as the rest of them. I watch every Patriots game I have to as a Boston-based sports writer. I watch, you know, every other NFL game that I can. I am obsessed with this league. I mean, hell, it's the early July and we're still talking NFL in some respect. You're right, it shouldn't be that way, but it is, because the product is so good, and that's what happens in a capitalist system. The best product wins out, it wins the market, And the NFL right now is the best entertainment product in the United States. And the ratings, the revenue, all that backs it up.
Alex Reimer joining us here on Fox. You can follow him on Twitter at Alex Reimer, R-E-I-M-E-R-1. Follow him on Twitter over there. And make sure to check out his writing over at Forbes magazine as well as Boston magazine and at SBNation.com. Alex, let's talk about this this new lawsuit here. And this is different. This one is a little different because it's a lawsuit not against the league, but it's against all 32
right.
individual teams. And there's names in this one that would shock some people here, especially old school NFL fans. Names like Don Shula, Mike Holmgren. These are names that are familiar to a lot of us who grew up as football fans of their complicity in this particular lawsuit.
Right, and not just their complicity, but you know what the, you know their actions. I mean, what they did. I mean, you know, this lawsuit alleges more than 1,500 former players claim that all 32 NFL teams and members of their training staff dispensed powerful painkiller drugs while misleading them about the health risks that come with taking those substances. And Don Shula, Mike Tice as well, Mike Holmgren are named, specifically as coaches really peddled these painkillers on players. A previous lawsuit was dismissed in 2014 that named the league instead of the 32 teams, and the judge actually, who green-lighted this case and for the discovery trial to begin, the judge said the CBA was the proper form to resolve that dispute. But yeah, we have a new one here. As you said, it names all 32 NFL teams. And it really isn't anything that we probably didn't imagine, right? I mean, just the viciousness of playing football, the prevalence of painkillers. I mean, we all kind of knew, but this just brings it to light and says, wow, I mean...
Welcome back. It is hour number three on a very busy Monday morning. We've spent the first couple of hours recapping a ton of action in the NFL, including a snooze fest of a Sunday night game that ended in a 6-6 tie between the Arizona Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks. I told you my two most impressive performances of the weekend come from teams that we don't really cover that much or just don't follow that much here on the program. The Kansas City Chiefs, I thought, was very impressive this past Sunday afternoon and beating up on the New Orleans Saints. And if you're not following the Detroit Lions, you probably should start doing so. That was a very impressive win yesterday, knocking off the Washington Redskins. We've also got a lot of previews still to come with the World Series, the NBA season coming up tomorrow. There's a ton going on. But we also have to talk about the latest, in the terms of nasty stories in the world of sports. And unfortunately, the NFL finds itself once again embroiled in a public relations nightmare, this one involving Josh Brown. Josh Brown has been placed on the NFL exempt list by Commissioner Roger Goodell. That happened on Friday. He's not expected to appeal that decision, but unfortunately, this is just the tip of the iceberg of a very, very sordid story in the National Football League. And joining us right now from New York City is our next guest. He's a lawyer representing the law firm of Cozen O'Connor out in New York City. We appreciate his time very much this morning, Jason Bonk. Jason, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it a lot. Obviously, the story is big in your neck of the woods out in New York City right now. What's been the mood or I guess some of the discussion regarding New Yorkers about this story?
I mean, I think part of the problem is the fact that why didn't Mara do anything along the way? I mean, this guy has an admitted now basically a history of domestic violence and domestic abuse and, you know, verbal, emotional, and physical abuse towards his significant other over the last several years. Kept a diary of it, I think. And I think that it's very troubling, and I think this is the move here. It's troubling the fact that nobody did anything. The league didn't do anything. The team didn't do anything.
The John Mara quote that I thought was most disturbing, and I'll play a clip of it here for you in a moment, is when he announces that, yeah, he's admitted to abusing his wife. To what extent, though, we don't know. Here's John Mara.
I want to get all the information first, Mike. I mean, I'm certainly disturbed by you know what we've read. And listen, he's admitted to us that you know, he's abused his wife in the past, and you know, I think what's a little unclear is the extent.
Really? Like, we have there's some sort of a flow chart on the New York Giants locker room wall of what extent of spousal abuse is okay to stay on the organization. That's one of the worst quotes ever.
It's a story arc, right? I mean, it's like you don't really know where it's going, up or down or up or down, but you actually do. I mean, right? It's horrible. I mean, domestic abuse isn't something to laugh at, obviously. I'm laughing right now just because of that quote.
Right.
But
I'm laughing because of the audacity and the absurdity of the quote, because it just reeks of this, like, oh, we're completely oblivious to how this looks to the outside world.
Well, I found the first line of the quote, or the second line, whatever it was, where he says, what we've read.
Right.
I mean, as if it wasn't documented long ago.
Right, yeah, that was the point I made on Friday when we were talking about this originally on Friday, was it's not like you read it in an online report on TMZ. No, you read it in court documents. That holds a little more weight than just finding it in some, you know, crappy thing on TMZ.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, this is a document. He documented it himself, meaning Brown did. I mean, he documented it. I mean, he. There's something up there, and all they did was basically say, you're not coming in to Wembley Stadium with us.
Right. Right? And I guess then you get to the next disturbing pattern of this, and that is in the NFL's response to it. Roger Goodell essentially called fans stupid for not understanding the domestic abuse policy in the NFL and how the league handles these things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this is just off the heels of Ray Rice. This is just off the heels of Ray McDonald. This is just off the heels of Greg Hardy. The last thing the league needed was this, but the last thing the league needed was the response to it, which is essentially, fans just don't understand. Oh, and by the way, Antonio Brown, stop celebrating touchdowns, because we want you guys to be role models that kids can follow.
Right, exactly. And I mean, I got to say, you know, you're talking about John Mayer, who's the head of the management council for the NFL, right? So he's the owners, basically. He's the leader of the owners. And he has been for quite some time. And we're having a situation now where the domestic abuse issue is just falling out of control. And the off-field conduct, especially vis-a-vis Deflategate, and I think Tom Brady commented on this story this morning, saying, I'm staying out of it, because someone asked him, and unfortunately his advisor said, or didn't say, or he just went ahead and commented on it, which is probably not the right choice. But at the same time, like, we've got this issue in professional sports, especially the NFL, where it's almost an implosion because of these things happening off field, and they're terrible.